Oh my goodness, if you can see the smile on my face, I hope you can hear it. I hope you can feel it because I am back tonight. I am so excited to be on with you tonight. There's so much going on in the world. You start wondering, okay, do we only look at the articles, the books, the conversations that matter in the last week? And I'm going to go to my producer extraordinaire, Jonathan Lowe, and ask this question. Jonathan, it's interesting how stations are now deciding how to do radio, how to make sure you are, looking at the really important issues that are going on right now. But at the same time, we're so used to being able to look at last week's newspapers and then Sunday's paper. And you find so many different articles and you don't know necessarily, okay, which one is most important to me? I can't think like that. I have to think what's most important to you, to the listening audience, because you matter. What do you say about that, Jonathan? How do you make decisions on what should be talked about?
Well, I try to look into things that are in the headlines, in the news. We weren't able to garner an interview on this tonight. I was trying to find someone to talk about one of the big stories of the week, which was the firings, speaking of in-house or inside baseball, some of the big firings in the national cable media news over the last 10 days or so. With a couple of big-time hosts being fired from their posts, a president, an executive being fired from, NBC. There was even a guy from, I believe, an executive from the BBC that got that resigned a couple of days ago. So you look at what's trending, you look at what's out there in the news. And then there are some other things that I look at, kind of what's going on that month, sort of like causes, things that are happening around stuff like cancer awareness, or hopefully we'll have a doctor on. I know this is the last day of April. Right. We were planning on having a doctor on to talk about stress. This is Stress Awareness Month. This is the last day of that. And schedules kind of got funky over the last few weeks. So we're going to try to have him on, even though the month ends today. We're going to have him on hopefully in the next couple weeks because, stress doesn't take a holiday. It don't take a holiday. It's around all year. So I try to combine those things, try to keep my ears open for other things that are going on around the cities that might be interesting, and just a mishmash of things.
So this is what producers do, and I expect that. Here's what my challenge is. I may read so many magazines and newspapers and that sort of thing, right? I'll get online and just look and look and look. And I decide, okay, I want to send this to Jonathan, or I want to send this to Chris Tubbs for the 9 o'clock hour. Then all of a sudden, that Saturday, things change, and there's more news, and there's more serious things to talk about. There are more funny things to talk about, and you can't always just change it up, although many do, right? Many do. But it's not easy to switch it up very quickly and get a guest in charge, right?
And
time.
One of the issues is I think this is much more of a possibility. You can do it better during the week because people are in during the week. They're checking their phones and their emails. They're not unplugged from the working world. But doing it on a Saturday or on a Sunday, it can be a challenge because of the fact that we all want to have our weekends. We all want to have those, especially in this country, we want to have those 2 days off. We don't want to have a 7-day work week where we're just going around the clock. So I understand and I get it. If something happens on Friday or Saturday, we may be scrambling. If it's really important, if it's something we really feel that needs to be done, we might try to scramble to get somebody, but it might be a week out. We might try to cover the topic, but it might be a week out or maybe a little bit longer to get someone to talk about it. And I understand it's not timely, And that's our bad if we can't get it to you on a timely basis. But we still want to try to cover the topic at some point in time.
Well, it depends. It depends on how quickly it stays. You know, we have to really define what it means when it comes to a brand new story that usurps the stories that have been going on in the last 5 days. Right. That's why I keep saying either Friday, Saturday or Saturday, Sunday,
yeah.
Because it changes. And when it changes, are the listeners upset because, oh, my gosh, I was hoping they would talk about that thing that we've been talking about for 5 days, but the show is only on a Sunday?
I don't think so. I'll say this. I think that in most cases, audience members, listeners, viewers, if you're talking about television, they are understanding that not only are we in a very accelerated time cycle when it comes to covering news, but also that you have a limited amount of time because you're not doing a show during the week. You're not doing a show 5 days a week where you can have multiple chances to talk about different stories throughout throughout that week.
You have can move it around. You can move it around, but you can't do that on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
And that's something, just a quick aside to this. So I was back home a couple of years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and there was a big story in the news, and I was staying at my father's place, and it was a Sunday morning, and the Sunday talking head shows on, you know, the regular channels on ABC, on NBC, on CBS, on CNN, on Fox News,
on MSNBC. In
the morning,
you mean? Yeah.
They were all
You're talking about the shows that are on in the morning?
Yes. They were all covering this topic that had been made news, I think, on Monday of that week. It had been 5 or 6 days since the news had broke. And my father was thinking, why do they keep going over this story again and again and again? And my response to him was, you have to realize this is their first chance to talk about it. They haven't had a chance to go on the air and address this issue or address this story. And so when they get a chance on Sunday, it's not like we're pulling something from a month before or 6 months out and bringing it back into the fold. It's something that's still kind of fresh in people's minds. So you have to always take into mind that some people don't have that 5 day a week show. They don't have that, you know, even three times a week. It's something that is going to be fresh, and you might get one chance to talk about it. And so
you got to
think about that.
Here's the thing. For Steel Talking, the thing that I've always enjoyed about this 24 years I've been here is that we get the chance to really think about what we're going to talk about. I don't want to deliver, you know, something to the audience on a Sunday night that is gory and horrible. If I can stay away from that on a Sunday night, I will every time, mainly because I don't want the listeners, and I hope you all are hearing this, I don't want you to cry and feel sad and feel awful about what has happened on Saturday or Sunday, and you are crying and it's hard for you to deal with it. The way I would approach that is for us to talk about it, but talk about it in a way that doesn't add to the pain. You remember when 9/11 happened. And I don't know if you remember. I don't think you were my producer then. I can't remember.
Oh, no. I was. That was my senior year of college. I wouldn't move here for another 6 years.
Okay. It was Nathan. That was his name. And I'll never forget. I asked my program director, and I asked him. I said, look, Nathan, I need to just have music. I need music right now. And that music really was soothing for me. And all I could do was hope that it was soothing for the audience. And when I would be out and about, all of a sudden, one or two people would walk up to me and say, you're Geraldine Steele. I go, yes, I am. Thank you so much for the music you played, because we are having a very difficult time with 9/11. And that's when I started to learn not everything we do on a Sunday night is the appropriate thing to do, right?
Well, it's always a balance. You want to stay on top of some of these big news stories that occur, but we don't want to try to browbeat. like you said. I understand, especially during that particular event, why you wanted to change the focus that way, because it had probably been about 6 or 7 days, or not six, 5 or 6 days straight of coverage of that, and so you need a mental break, and that's why, again, senior in college, when that happened, there was a debate. I was working in the sports department of the school newspaper, and there was a debate between myself and some of the other guys, the editor, the assistant editor, about whether sports should come back that weekend. And the guys that were in the editor and assistant editor position were like, yeah, sports needs to come back right away. We can't stop for any second. And I said, we got to stop for a beat. We got to at least take a weekend off and just try to heal.
But we took so much more than that off. Our children couldn't go to school. My son couldn't go to school. My daughter couldn't go to school when that event happened.
Yeah.
And it took weeks, not days. It wasn't 5 or 6 days. It was 5 or 6 weeks. And finally, we were starting to get real answers. You know, a lot of speculation. People were wandering around trying to figure out what the heck happened. So in order to get that information, we had to wait for it. And we did. And it was worth the wait.
I will say this before we head to break. I understand what you're saying. I think that wait was part of the healing process to try to understand, to get a sense of confidence, to get a sense of, and people talk about this with COVID, normalcy back into what had been a chaotic event. I'm not saying that we should have waited for 5 or 6 weeks, but I thought we should have waited a few days just to try to clear our heads, because everything was spinning at that point.
Too much was going in our heads. We needed truth. We needed facts. And we didn't get those facts. It took a while to get those, and it was challenging, but it was worth the wait.
I will say this. I was not expecting truth or facts right away. I was maybe hoping for it. I wasn't expecting it. It's that with an event like that, you learn over time that it's going to take time to get to the root cause of it. It really is.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I understand. We're going to have to take a break. If you'd like to join us, we'll be taking your calls here for the next 19 minutes or so. And you all have to do is call 651-461-9226. Again, that's 651-461-9226. I look forward to hearing from you. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. So glad to have you join us with us tonight. Yes, this is Steele Talkin'. I'm your host, Geralyn Steele. Been here 24, almost 25 years now, so it's such a pleasure being on with you. As you just heard the voice of Jonathan Lowe, we have two producers. He is one of them, the first that does the 7 o'clock through the 9 o'clock. I'm sorry, up to the 9 o'clock hour. And then the 9 o'clock hour is Chris Tubbs as my producer. I'm so grateful for both of them. They do a great job. Now, as you just heard from us a moment ago, we were talking about things that happen in the news and how quickly it changes. It can change from one story to the next story. And all of these incredible shootings and killings, and we're hearing about it every day. Another mass shooting. And after a while, I don't know about you, but I get weary. I'm worn out from it. And I try to find the most peaceful thing I can use for my brain, my heart, and my soul. And I don't know, Jonathan, how you do it. You hear these things all the time, all week long when you're working here at WCCO. I don't know how you do it.
Well,
but it's really hard for me to keep listening.
Number one, I'm not working here all week long at CCO. I'm only here on Sundays.
That's right.
Yep. But
do you know I forgot that?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
No, but I'm terrible at this, because I get into the cycle when I hear something, when I hear about the mass shooting in Louisville or the mass shooting in Nashville or
Austin. It was everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah, the one last night, a couple nights ago, I think, that happened outside of Houston, where they're still looking for the guy. Or the earthquakes that happened in Syria and Turkey, and all of that. I I get into kind of a feeding cycle of I need to find out the latest, and I stay on it for hours. And then after a while, I'm like, okay, I need a break from this. But I need to get out of that cycle of that because it can really damage you. It can really damage your psyche.
Well, there's one thing that I would say. I would ask this question every Sunday night until we get the full information that we need to really understand it all. You just mentioned about earthquakes, and I look at my, you know, at whom I'm getting emotional, at whom I'm interviewing tonight. And the big thing for me coming up next is Dr. Jonathan E. Martin. He's a professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And as you were talking about climate changes and what we're going through, we're going to talk about that at 7:35. And the thing that really challenges me when it comes to climate change is that it is ever changing. It's no longer just changing a little bit and then for the next 3 years we're just fine, you know, like the old almanac. No, it's not like that. It's changing every day. It seems like every moment, every minute. So, yeah, those are the things that I lose sleep over. I worry about my grandbabies, and I keep saying to my 10-year-old granddaughter, you are all going to have to save the world. You're going to have to save the world. And they look at me and never say a word. They just look at me as if to say, okay. But that's how I feel about it. All right, everyone. That's where we are right now. Coming up next, again,
Dr. Jonathan E. Don't catch that phone.
Dr. Jonathan E. Martin, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We'll be back. Oh, welcome back, everyone. Jonathan and I are talking off. We didn't know we were back. Oh, my goodness. Welcome back, everyone.
Sorry, the music there just kind of cut out. I don't know what happened.
Just cut out is as to say, no, we're done.
The file is still playing, but the music cut out.
Well, as you know, I've already mentioned who our guest is tonight, and I am very excited about this guest. Dr. Jonathan E. Martin is his name, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. What is this all about? Well, news stories about devastating flooding events, severe weather outbreaks, and crippling winter storms have many wondering if our weather patterns have been permanently shifted. Is this the new normal, or can we possibly reverse these effects of climate change? Well, let's go over to our guest, Dr. Jonathan E. Martin, and find out. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We are doing just fine. Really appreciate you joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. The question I want to start out with, sir, is it possible for the climate changes to change themselves? Is it possible for the earth to just change it so that we level out? Because I keep hearing from other friends, no, it's not possible.
Yeah, I think that we're dealing with, in the last 150 to 200 years, a change that has been entirely wrought by human activity on the planet. And in the Earth's history, going back millions and millions of years, has seen many instances of long-term change where we've had ice ages intermittently. We've had, you know, when the dinosaurs were on the planet, the temperatures at high latitude, 60 and 70 degrees north, were more like what they are in the tropics now. But so the planet has undergone substantial changes in its long, long history of hundreds of millions of years with life on it. But we've never had a change that's been as dramatic as the one that's gone on in the last couple of hundred years, and that change has been entirely wrought by activity, particularly industrialization of the planet at the hands of human beings. And so what we've done is we've changed the chemical composition of our atmosphere from having roughly 250 to 300 molecules per million of any bag of air that you would sample being carbon dioxide to right now the average is about 420 such molecules per million. And so that's an extraordinary increase. And that particular gas is one of the primary greenhouse gases in the planet. And it allows for solar radiation, a particular kind, the ones that our eyes are sensitive to, very high energy, short wavelength radiation, to come right through the atmosphere as if it weren't even there. It's just like coming right through a window. But then the infrared energy that's emitted by the surface of the Earth, by human beings on the planet, by the ocean surface, doesn't get out back to outer space without being interrupted in that journey by the presence of carbon dioxide. And so that carbon dioxide reabsorbs some of that energy and then re-emits it back to the surface. So the planet is much warmer than it would otherwise be without carbon dioxide. in its atmosphere. And when you turn up the amount of carbon dioxide, you're in trouble because you're making it hotter for the planet to cool. And that's how we're warming right now. And your question about, are we going to be able to reverse those effects without any subsequent intervention? I think the answer is it might take 100 years if we suddenly stopped using any carbon fuels of any kind. We might in 100 or 200 years have a relaxation back to more natural conditions of about 300 or so molecules per million. But we won't get there without a concerted, premeditated, and deliberate effort. And so I think that's what the argument and the energy ought to be directed towards, is how we're going to do that.
So I look back at some of the years, maybe 5 to 6 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, that was when we started learning about, okay, we've got this pandemic that's coming up. Okay, yeah, it's going to be awful. And when that pandemic happened, a lot of the birds and animals started coming out. The flamingos on certain islands started coming out and basking in the sun because there were no human beings out. We were all hiding away, trying to stay away from COVID. And I'm just curious to know, once it all returned, we started getting out without our masks. We started moving about throughout the world. And I'm wondering if it's a bad idea for us to keep going out and coming in when it comes to the Earth and its and what's happening with the atmosphere.
I think there's room on this gigantic, glorious planet for all forms of life, including ours, which is so intelligent that it can change aspects of nature to its own desires, including our industrialization, including our need to power our civilizations. But we have to be more creative about it. And it's only about 100 or so years ago that we really started to use, 150 years ago, I guess, we started to use petroleum products on the scale that we now do. And in the last 50 of those 150 years, we probably should have been looking toward the future and saying, let's start to supplement the easy, cheap, and available use of petroleum products with some other things that we might be able to do instead, like solar and wind. And there's been an explosion in solar energy technology in the last 20 years to the point where it's now cheaper for a lot of applications than petroleum products. And I think the market, if it's free of the biases that we've accumulated over those 150 years may actually rather rapidly dictate that we start doing things in a different way, which would be beneficial to the Earth's environment. So there's hope that that will take place. But I think it's wise for governments around the world, and including our own, to actually jumpstart that effort and not just wait for it to happen naturally. The market is a powerful force, but if it's jumpstarted towards a goal, it'll be even more powerful and more rapidly advancing with that power. So I'm hoping that we can get something like that going in the next 5, 10, 15 years.
I hope you are correct, sir. Now, here's the big challenge for me right now, today, in this moment, is that I can't say anything about Wisconsin. I don't know enough about how that's being handled there. But here in Minnesota, we are seeing the changes. We know it is it. We see it, and we sit and say, oh, it'll be fine. It'll correct itself. The Earth is going to correct itself. How do we participate in that correction?
Well, there's a number of ways, I think, where we can do that. One is we can start voting for people who see this as a real problem and stop voting for people who deny that it's a problem at all. So that's one thing we can do in a capitalistic democracy, is we can demand from our leaders that they take this problem seriously and that they work towards solutions for it in the long term. The other is we can all try to be as economical as possible with our use of energies. And when there's an opportunity, I actually think this will be a revolution that's brought about by people of means. It won't be brought about by people who are struggling to keep the bills paid and to feed their families, and that the burden should not be put upon them. So if somebody has to drive an old, inefficient car just because that's all they can afford at the time, driving from worksite to worksite, no one should make that person feel guilty. We should not punish those people in any way, psychic or otherwise. But it should be people who have the means to make better choices. And choices of maybe putting solar panels on their own house, maybe buying a car that has got some electrical fuel as an aspect of it, a hybrid or something like that. Just cutting away a little bit at a time on some of the use of these fossil fuels will be a really big step in the right direction. But it's going to take a consciousness raising that people have to stop arguing that this isn't a problem and then start to think constructively about the number of possible ways that we might solve it. As I said earlier, I really think that way too much energy is poorly wasted on thinking about or arguing about whether or not there actually is a global warming going on. There is. There's no question about that. That energy should be better spent in trying to come up with bipartisan solutions to do something about it.
We are even noticing, I mean, if you're out on a cruise or anything like that, you can see what is happening to the oceans. You can see how much trash is floating above the ocean. And this is painful to see. Yet people will go right back into that cruise ship and sit down and have a nice piece of cake or breakfast and laugh and have a great time and dance in the rooms. And no one seems to really pay attention to it. It's like, oh, that's sad. And then you move on. It has to be something more that we all have to agree to understand and accept. I don't even know what that is, but I feel as though there is something that can be said or done in this country or this state that could really make a difference just for the little amount of space that we even have in Minnesota. Do you believe that?
I sure do. I remember quite vividly those advertisements on television from the early 1970s when President Nixon, of all people, decided that it was time that there would be an environmental protection agency. That was established under President Nixon. And remember those commercials where they'd have the Native American on horseback coming to the edge of a highway and there was all this trash and the tear would come down his eye. It was a building consciousness in the early 70s about, well, we can do something about this. And the country looks better than it used to in 1972. And that was a shift in people's attitudes. And I think similar kinds of things can be done on some of these other high-profile problems, like the one you bring up. It's very important that people realize this planet is a giving planet. We are not in any danger of running out of resources if we manage them carefully and if we have respect for them. And I think there's sometimes where all of us are a little short-sighted and get caught up in what it is we need to get done this week, this year, or this next few years, and we stop thinking about that as a real, value, that the limited nature and the precarious nature of natural resources on the planet. But we're smart enough to manage them better, and that's what we need to do.
Well, one thing I do know is that we are all seeing it happen, yet there doesn't seem to be action. And leadership is everything, sir, as you and I both know. Leadership is everything. And all of a sudden, leadership changes and everything changes. We're not getting a dang thing done. Then we have to wait another 4 years and then things will start getting done. And then all of a sudden it won't. There's no way we can succeed if we're constantly changing our minds. Where do we start? It's a real problem.
I think that is a problem. I really do think that's a problem. I think the young generation, the people younger than me, are confronted with a situation that none of my generation or prior generations have ever had to work with, which is trying to get, global neighbors to work together. We've never had to do that before. That's the only way we're going to solve this problem of the climate and try and protect the environment of the earth that will protect, in turn, our civilization, which we're all used to. And that's what's at risk. The planet will survive. Will our civilization survive is the question. The planet's got plenty up its sleeve, but it's human civilization is on the tip of a needle at all times in terms of the benevolence of the environment. But how can we get this to actually happen? I really do believe it's a consciousness raising that has to be done. And so there'll be people who will scream and yell that when young people in grade schools and in high schools are being told about the environment and how precarious the situation is, they're being indoctrinated, they're being bamboozled. And we need to get rid of those people from the public sphere because they're wrong. And that will be the way that we can maybe make some progress in terms of turning people's attitudes towards a more conservative, ironically, approach about the environment.
My goodness, I don't know how that can be done, especially quickly, because this is something that needs to be done quickly. We've been saying this. You remember when Al Gore made his statement in 2000 or 2001, and he came forward and said, look, it's all about to change. We have 20 years to change it. Next thing I hear, 8 years later, oh, we have 35 years left. We got to, get a hold of this. So those numbers keep changing. You keep changing the minds of Americans. After a while, we're just going to go blank.
Yeah. Now, some of that is a function of increasing knowledge, which is always running apace with the passage of the calendar. We're learning more, and so we can refine what we know and what we...
Oh, welcome back, everyone. Jonathan and I are talking off. We didn't know we were back. Oh, my goodness. Welcome back, everyone.
Sorry, the music there just kind of cut out. I don't know
just
what
cut
happened.
Out is as to say
the,
no,
the
we're
file
done.
Is still playing, but the music cut out.
Well, as you know, I've already mentioned who our guest is tonight, and I am very excited about this guest. Dr. Jonathan E. Martin is his name, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. What is this all about? Well, news stories about devastating flooding events, severe weather outbreaks, and crippling winter storms have many wondering if our weather patterns have been permanently shifted. Is this the new normal, or can we possibly reverse these effects of climate change? Well, let's go over to our guest, Dr. Jonathan E. Martin, and find out. Welcome, sir. How are you?
Good. How are you?
We are doing just fine. Really appreciate you joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. The question I want to start out with, sir, is it possible for the climate changes to change themselves? Is it possible for the earth to just change it so that we level out? Because I keep hearing from other friends, no, it's not possible.
Yeah, I think that we're dealing with, in the last 150 to 200 years, a change that has been entirely wrought by human activity on the planet. And in the Earth's history, going back millions and millions of years, has seen many instances of long-term change where we've had ice ages intermittently. We've had, you know, when the dinosaurs were on the planet, the temperatures at high latitude, 60 and 70 degrees north, were more like what they are in the tropics now. But so the planet has undergone substantial changes in its long, long history of hundreds of millions of years with life on it. But we've never had a change that's been as dramatic as the one that's gone on in the last couple of hundred years. And that change has been entirely wrought by activity, particularly industrialization of the planet at the hands of human beings. And so what we've done is we've changed the chemical composition of our atmosphere from having roughly 250 to 300 molecules per million of any bag of air that you would sample being carbon dioxide to right now the average is about 420 such molecules per million. And so that's an extraordinary increase. And that particular gas is one of the primary greenhouse gases in the planet. And it allows for solar radiation, a particular kind, the ones that our eyes are sensitive to, very high energy, short wavelength radiation, to come right through the atmosphere as if it weren't even there. It's just like coming right through a window. But then the infrared energy that's emitted by the surface of the Earth, by human beings on the planet, by the ocean surface, doesn't get out back to outer space without being interrupted in that journey by the presence of carbon dioxide. And so that carbon dioxide reabsorbs some of that energy and then re-emits it back to the surface. So the planet is much warmer than it would otherwise be without carbon dioxide in its atmosphere. And when you up the amount of carbon dioxide, you're in trouble because you're making it hotter for the planet to cool. And that's how we're warming right now. And your question about are we going to be able to reverse those effects without any subsequent intervention, I think the answer is it might take 100 years if we suddenly stopped using any carbon fuels of any kind. We might in 100 or 200 years have a relaxation back to more natural conditions of about 300 or so molecules per million. But we won't get there without a concerted, premeditated, and deliberate effort. And so I think that's what the argument and the energy ought to be directed towards, is how we're going to do that.
So I look back at some of the years, maybe 5 to 6 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, that was when we started learning about, okay, we've got this pandemic that's coming up. Okay, yeah, it's going to be awful. And when that pandemic happened, a lot of the birds and animals started coming out. The flamingos on certain islands started coming out and basking in the sun because there were no human beings out. We were all hiding away, trying to stay away from COVID. And I'm just curious to know, once it all returned, we started getting out without our masks. We started moving about throughout the world. And I'm wondering if it's a bad idea for us to keep going out and coming in when it comes to the Earth and its and what's happening with the atmosphere.
I think there's room on this gigantic, glorious planet for all forms of life, including ours, which is so intelligent that it can change aspects of nature to its own desires, including our industrialization, including our needs to power our civilizations. But we have to be more creative about it. And it's only about 100 or so years ago that we really started to use, 150 years ago, I guess, we started to use petroleum products on the scale that we now do. And in the last 50 of those 150 years, we probably should have been looking toward the future and saying, let's start to supplement the easy, cheap, and available use of petroleum products with some other things that we might be able to do instead, like solar and wind. And there's been an explosion in solar energy technology in the last 20 years to the point where it's now cheaper for a lot of applications than petroleum products. And I think the market, if it's free of the biases that we've accumulated over those 150 years, may actually rather rapidly dictate that we start doing things in a different way, which would be beneficial to the Earth's environment. So there's hope that that will take place, but I think it's wise for governments around the world, and including our own, to actually jumpstart that effort and not just wait for it to happen naturally. The market is a powerful force, but if it's jumpstarted towards a goal, it'll be even more powerful and more rapidly advancing with that power. So I'm hoping that we can get something like that going in the next 5, 10, 15 years.
I hope you are correct, sir. Now, here's the big challenge for me right now, today, in this moment, is that I can't say anything about Wisconsin. I don't know enough about how that's being handled there. But here in Minnesota, we are seeing the changes. We know what is it. We see it, and we sit and say, oh, it'll be fine. It'll correct itself. The earth is going to correct itself. How do we participate in that correction?
Well, there's a number of ways, I think, where we can do that. One is we can start voting for people who see this as a real problem and stop voting for people who deny that it's a problem at all. So that's one thing we can do in a capitalistic democracy, is we can demand from our leaders that they take this problem seriously and that they work towards solutions for it in the long term. The other is we can all try to be as economical as possible with our use of energies. And when there's an opportunity, I actually think this will be a revolution that's brought about by people of means. It won't be brought about by people who are struggling to keep the bills paid and to feed their families, and that the burden should not be put upon them. So if somebody has to drive an old, inefficient car just because that's all they can afford at the time, driving from worksite to worksite, no one should make that person feel guilty. We should not punish those people in any way, psychic or otherwise. But it should be people who have the means to make better choices. And choices of maybe putting solar panels on their own house, maybe buying a car that has got some electrical fuel as an aspect of it, a hybrid or something like that. Just cutting away a little bit at a time on some of the use of these fossil fuels will be a really big step in the right direction. But it's going to take a consciousness raising that people have to stop arguing that this isn't a problem and then start to think constructively about the number of possible ways that we might solve it. As I said earlier, I really think that way too much energy is poorly wasted on thinking about or arguing about whether or not there actually is a global warming going on. There is. There's no question about that. That energy should be better spent in trying to come up with bipartisan solutions to do something about it.
We are even noticing, I mean, if you're out on a cruise or anything like that, you can see what is happening to the oceans. You can see how much trash is floating above the ocean. And this is painful to see. Yet people will go right back into that cruise ship and sit down and have a nice piece of cake or breakfast and laugh and have a great time and dance in the rooms. And no one seems to really pay attention to it. It's like, oh, that's sad. And then you move on. It has to be something more that we all have to agree to understand and accept. I don't even know what that is, but I feel as though there is something that can be said or done in this country or this state that could really make a difference just for the little amount of space that we even have in Minnesota. Do you believe that?
I sure do. I remember quite vividly those advertisements on television from the early 1970s when President Nixon, of all people, decided that it was time that there would be an environmental protection agency. That was established under President Nixon. And remember those commercials where they'd have the Native American on horseback coming to the edge of a highway and there was all this trash and the tear would come down his eye. There was a building consciousness in the early 70s about, well, we can do something about this. And the country looks better than it used to in 1972. And that was a shift in people's attitudes. And I think similar kinds of things can be done on some of these other high-profile problems like the one you bring up. It's very important that people realize this planet is a giving planet. We are not in any danger of running out of resources if we manage them carefully and if we have respect for them. And I think there's sometimes where all of us are a little short-sighted and get caught up in what it is we need to get done this week, this year, or this next few years, and we stop thinking about that as a real value, that the limited nature and the precarious nature of natural resources on the planet. But if we're smart enough to manage them better, and that's what we need to do.
Well, one thing I do know is that we are all seeing it happen, yet there doesn't seem to be action. And leadership is everything, sir, as you and I both know. Leadership is everything. And all of a sudden, leadership changes and everything changes. We're not getting a dang thing done. Then we have to wait another 4 years and then things will start getting done. And then all of a sudden it won't. There's no way we can succeed if we're constantly changing our minds. Where do we start? It's a real problem.
I think that is a problem. I really do think that's a problem. I think the young generation, the people younger than me, are confronted with a situation that none of my generation or prior generations have ever had to work with, which is trying to get, you know, global neighbors to work together. We've never had to do that before. That's the only way we're going to solve this problem of the climate and try and protect the environment of the earth that will protect, in turn, our civilization, which we're all used to. And that's what's at risk. The planet will survive. Will our civilization survive is the question. The planet's got plenty up its sleeve, but it's human civilization is on the tip of a needle at all times in terms of the benevolence of the environment. But how can we get this to actually happen? I really do believe it's a consciousness raising that has to be done. And so there'll be people who will scream and yell that when young people in grade schools and in high schools are being told about the environment and how precarious the situation is, they're being indoctrinated, they're being bamboozled. And we need to get rid of those people from the public sphere because they're wrong. And that will be the way that we can maybe make some progress in terms of turning people's attitudes towards a more conservative, ironically, approach about the environment.
My goodness, I don't know how that can be done, especially quickly, because this is something that needs to be done quickly. We've been saying this. You remember when Al Gore made his statement in 2000 or 2001, and he came forward and said, look, it's all about to change. We have 20 years to change it. Next thing I hear, you know, 8 years later, oh, we have 35 years left. We got to, you know, get a hold of this. So those numbers keep changing. You keep changing the minds of Americans. After a while, we're just going to go blank.
Yeah. Now, some of that is a function of increasing knowledge, which is always running apace with you know, the passage of the calendar. We're learning more, and so we can refine what we know and what we expect and what might be a reasonable prediction. So some of that's just natural, the way science works. You get a little bit better and better at understanding the nature of the problem. But we're pretty much at the end of the line on that. I don't think we're really going to be able to say 20 years from now that, oh, hey, we just found a new reason to say we've got 50 more years. Those days are over. And so we need to make serious progress on this problem. But I'll say that the president has enacted a gigantic bill a year and a half ago now on the Reconstruction Act, and a lot of that has to do with carbon fuel
emissions,
rebates and stuff like that. So there's progress being made there, and it's just if we can get everybody on board to say, okay, let's try and do this step by step, try something, assess whether it's worked, and then move on to the next attempt, we can do this in a systematic fashion. But we can't do it if we've got unreasonable skepticism about the nature of the problem. And I'm afraid that's what the alternative in our political sphere in the country right now offers. They offer an unreasonable alternative, which is there is no climate crisis. There's nothing to worry about. Keep moving on. Nothing to see here. They're wrong about that. And that's objectively
wrong. They are so wrong. And we see it every day. If our eyes are open, we see what's happening, whether it's the tornadoes, the flooding. We could go down the whole list that is happening every day.
Well, you could
How
live
can
in Miami
they say nothing? Yeah,
and every
go ahead,
day,
sir.
When the tide comes in, downtown Miami floods. That's not because somebody's making up some sort of story that makes the downtown part of Miami flood every day when the tide comes in. It's because the water level's higher because the climate's changed and the ocean levels are higher. And so, you know, Senator Rubio down there once said, you can't make laws that'll change the weather. That's about the most ignorant thing anyone in an elected office could possibly have said with reference to this problem. Because that's not what people are trying to do. They're trying instead to limit the damage that some of the stuff we've already wrought has brought to places like Miami, like many of the small islands in the South Pacific, et cetera.
Sir, this is my final question for you, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Yeah.
I want to know if the United States, if every person in the United States got on board with what you've been saying tonight, would it be enough? I don't believe it would be enough. I think we need the whole world to participate in this healing. And I think it ought to be mandatory. Of course, many would laugh at me about that, but that's what I want. Do you believe that could ever be possible?
Yeah, I'll say I have two responses to that. It's a very good question and a good point. I think there's almost no denying that the United States is and can be a leader in just about every global initiative, whether it be peace initiatives, whether it be economic initiatives, whether it be democratic initiatives, and in this case, environmental initiatives. The United States can't be the only player, but the United States has the ability to rally other smaller players and sometimes other bigger players. If we can isolate China, for instance, and make them the only giant industrialized economy that's not paying attention to these issues and get everybody else to be in alliance with us, that puts undue pressure on China and probably extraordinary economic pressure on them. They're going to have to make a concession. And if we don't get our act together and start solving the problem of what will be the energy of the future, I would much prefer that the United States and its laboratories and its engineers come up with those answers than those answers be discovered in China or in India, where people that would make us a vassal state for the next 100 or so years. And we don't want that. And so people, you can't be simultaneously of the belief that America is the greatest country on earth and then say, but it can't rise to this challenge. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I do believe America is the greatest country on earth, and I do believe that it can rise to this challenge. And that's what I would say to fill you with hope. Try not to be pessimistic. We can do it. We've done big things before. We've done big things nobody else could do. We can do this.
I know we can do it. What's painful is that others may not do it in front of us. They will do something completely wrong. And you can't stop and just, I wish we had more time, sir. Thank you so much for joining us tonight and giving me some clarity. I really needed it. So thank you, sir.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. That was Dr. Jonathan E. Martin, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. All right. We're going to take a break and we'll be back. It is now 7:56 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Jonathan Lowe is the producer, and he joins me from time to time in and out of conversations. And Jonathan, I don't know about you. I mean, you are a trained meteorologist from years ago. And hearing him talk about some of these changes and what could be done, you know, it's very obvious the United States can't do it by ourselves. But because of the power that we have, I know that we can make a difference. That is for sure. Do you agree?
We have to do it, not just by conscious thought of mind, but also by legislation. We have to do it that way because we're not going to be our better angels all the time. So we need help. We need help.
All right, then. That's it. We need help, everyone. So let's get to it. Let's get it done. It's going to take a lifetime. All right, coming up next, we're going to have Ted Rossman join us, senior banking analyst at Bankrate.com. Ooh, we got things to talk about when it comes to marriage. We'll be back. It is now 7:56 here at WCCO. Welcome back. Jonathan Lowe is the producer, and he joins me from time to time in and out of conversations. And Jonathan, I don't know about you. I mean, you are a trained meteorologist from years ago. And hearing him talk about some of these changes and what could be done, you know, it's very obvious the United States can't do it by ourselves. But because of the power that we have, I know that we can make a difference. That is for sure. Do you agree?
We have to do it, not just by conscious thought of mind, but also by legislation. We have to do it that way because we're not going to be our better angels all the time. So we need help. We need help.
All right, then. That's it. We need help, everyone. So let's get to it. Let's get it done. It's going to take a lifetime. All right, coming up next, we're going to have Ted Rossman join us, senior banking analyst at Bankrate.com. Ooh, we got things to talk about when it comes to marriage. We'll be back.